You're listening to OWW Radio,
the official radio show of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com.
All right. So here we are, living it day by day. You are a superstar. And that's what she used to always say.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of OWW Radio. This is the official radio program of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. Each week, OWW Radio will bring perspective to the WWE, TNA, and everything else making news in the world of professional wrestling. My name is David, and today I am joined by the Golden Boy, Greg Anthony, a star in traditional championship wrestling. In fact, he is TCW's reigning international champion. Greg Anthony, welcome to OWW Radio. Thank you for joining me.
How is it going tonight?
It's going well. It was nice seeing you recently in Las Vegas at the CAC reunion. Did you have a good time there?
Absolutely. It's always a pleasure to get to go to Las Vegas, kick back a little bit, and learn about professional wrestling. That's what I was there for. Mm-hmm.
Well, first of all, congratulations on your career. You are the current TCW International Champion, correct?
Correct. The title I actually won in Vegas at the CAC.
Yeah, you won it at the Casino Royale Wrestling Show, which we've talked about this before here on OWW Radio. It's a really nice way to kick off the CAC reunion, that Monday night show.
Absolutely. I mean, it's a great way to, first of all, you've got guys from all over the country, all over the world, really, in one place at one time, and get together and actually be able to work a show together. It's a very unique experience for everybody.
Yeah, and for people that don't know, it's a mix of several different promotions and headlined really by Vendetta Pro Wrestling. But when you were there, Greg, did any other wrestlers really catch your eye?
There were several people. One name that comes to mind is a gentleman by the name of Levi Shapiro. He's out of North California. And he's got a Jewish gimmick. He's very over the top. And I love different in professional wrestling. I think there's too much cookie cutter stuff going on right now. And anybody that's different out of the box, I tend to draw towards. And he was definitely one that I liked. Another guy was El Chupacabra, which had a very unique look. I mean, he had like double fangs and. He had snake eyes and everything like that. So, I mean, like I said, anything that's out of the ordinary and out of the realm that we normally see is something that I'm truly drawn to, as well as, like, female wrestlers, like a Bandy Hall from Canada. Mm-hmm. You know, she was someone that I had an eye on. She's very, very talented. And, you know, the fact that she's only been in the business a couple of years is a testament to what she's doing.
Yeah, it's an interesting show. I mean, it certainly there were some great female matches, and, of course, headlined by Melissa Anderson, cheerleader Melissa, who's a big star. There were also some big, famous male wrestlers on the program, Matt Riviera and some others. So it's really a good show, Greg. We spoke with AJ Kirsch recently here on OWW Radio, and he was saying he felt, you know, a sense of importance on that show, too, because you know who's in the audience. It's a real collection of professional wrestling history.
Yeah, I mean, you got a guy like Les Thatcher and Nick Bockwinkle, and, you know, last year Harley Race was there. I mean, when you have guys like that, guys that you've idolized your whole life, you know, and they're watching you and how you perform and where you're taking the business from where they took it, and it's definitely, it's pressure, but it's good pressure. You know, it's the kind of pressure that I want to be in.
Well, like I said in the opening, you are a star for traditional championship wrestling, the reigning international champion. Things are obviously going great for you, but I wanted to ask you, were you always a fan of professional wrestling? Was this always your end goal?
Yeah, it was. I mean, I tell people that my earliest memories of life are of professional wrestling. I know that sounds kind of weird, but it wasn't me blowing out a candle on a birthday cake. It wasn't me getting a new bike or anything like that. It was actually me on my grandmother's knee watching professional wrestling, watching Ric Flair and Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard and Terry Von Erich and all those guys. And, you know, that's my earliest memory in life. I feel personally like I was born to do this, like I was put on this earth to be a professional wrestler. And when you get together in Las Vegas at the CAC, you find a lot of guys that feel that same way. They feel that they're here to do this. So, yeah, to answer your question, from day one.
It's interesting when people talk about how some of their early memories are watching professional wrestling with a relative. We always romanticize baseball as being this sport that's passed down from one generation to the next, but you could really argue that professional wrestling is an entertainment passed down from one generation to the next as well.
Yeah, you know, I've written articles for websites too, and one thing that I've said is everyone has a wrestling story. Everyone has an uncle or a grandfather or somebody that gave them their first glimpse into professional wrestling. And it's one of those things that, especially in my area and in the Memphis area, you know, a lot of people romanticize that with Jerry Lawler, Bill Dundee, and things like that. It's just, it's one of those things that I really feel everybody has a connection to in some way, shape, or form.
Now, you say your area, the Memphis area, is that where you grew up?
Well, I was actually born in Southern Illinois. Mm-hmm. So, like, when my grandmother was watching, it was, you know, the Crockett territory. We got WWF, obviously, and we got World Class. And then when I was 6, 7 years old, we moved to Tennessee.
Okay.
And I was flipping through the channels one Saturday morning, and all of a sudden, what is this? It's Bill Dundee and Jerry Lawler. And my eyes were open because I'd never seen this before. So I was like, what is this? And that became my fandom with them.
Now, when you were growing up, though, I mean, you had this interest in professional wrestling, but were you a good athlete? Did you play a lot of other sports?
When I got into junior high, in high school, I was. I didn't play Little League, stuff like that, but I was heavily into basketball. As much as I love professional wrestling, it was my first love. For a while there, basketball was just as much a love as mine as wrestling was. I spent probably 8 years playing organized basketball.
Okay.
And I actually, you know, I was very heavily involved with that. They wanted me to coach. They wanted me to referee. They wanted me to continue that after I got out of high school. But I was already bitten by the wrestling bug by then. So.
Now, I have to ask you, you spent some time in Tennessee, and you have this love for basketball. Are you a Memphis Grizzlies fan?
I'm actually a Bulls fan, which I'm heartbroken today after last night, but I'm very proud of the Memphis Grizzlies, you know, being, you know, from the Memphis area. You know, I was a Bulls fan I'm not a Fairweather fan at all, so I've kept the Bulls, the Niners, and the Cards my whole life. So, but I'm very, very proud of the Grizzlies. I hope to see them in the finals. I really do.
Yeah, my own personal stories. I've gone to Memphis off and on for about 13 years for my professional job, my quote-unquote real job. And I love the city of Memphis. I love the people. I love the spirit there. And just became a big, big Grizzlies fan. This has been an unbelievable couple weeks.
Yeah, absolutely. They've been doing a great job. I've actually got, you know, friends that give me tickets when the Bulls are in town. I go watch the Bulls and the Grizzlies all the time. So that's always a fun thing.
Well, you had mentioned that everyone has, you know, a wrestling story, quote unquote. And one of my favorite questions to ask a professional wrestler is, you wanted to be a pro wrestler, but how did you actually get your start? What did you, you know, where did you start your training, and what made you actually get in the car that day and say that this is something I'm actually going to do? It went from being theoretical to a real situation for you.
Well, when I started, it was kind of at that threshold of people were trying to get in, but it still seemed like so hard to get into the professional wrestling business. We were trying to find the right schools. We were trying to find the right people to train us. We were trying to do all this kind of stuff. And one of my buddies who still wrestles, his name is the trendsetter, John Michael. And me and him are from the same hometown. I'm a couple years older than him, but we grew up together, elementary school, basketball, like I was talking about, things like that. And his dad was actually a cop in New Bern, Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, Memphis Championship Wrestling was a developmental territory.
Okay.
And they traveled all through this area. And they would come to New Bern, and they would draw, you know, 40 people, 40, 50 people. And one day my dad's friend went up to the promoter and said, "Hey, listen, my son and his friend, they're trying to get professional wrestlers. Can you help them out any?" He said, "Sure, send them down to the one show." So we went down, we met Terry Golden. And Terry Golden got in the ring. He said, "You know, let me see what you can do. Let me see if you know anything."
Yeah.
And we did a little stuff, and he liked it. You know, we were we were off on some stuff. Obviously, we didn't have any psychology down, stuff like that, but he kind of helped us along with that, and he actually put us in a intermission match, which if you book two hometown boys in their hometown in an intermission match, something's going to happen, and sure enough, they drew 200 people that night. So, which we didn't understand that then. We just thought, hell, we're, you know, this opportunity of a lifetime.
Absolutely.
And sure enough, it was a show with, you know, William Regal was on that show, R-Truth, who was, you know, K-Quick back then.
Yep.
Or K-Crush, actually. He was there. Brian Danielson was there. He was the American Dragon under a hood. He used to do the Hacksaw Jim Duggan. He did, you know, stuff like that. And we were on that card with those guys. And we, for about 3 or 4 months, you know, they came in monthly, and we worked with them. And then eventually, of course, developmental got pulled away from them. And then we called on with a local federation here and finished out training and stuff with them. And the rest is history.
Greg, are you a full-time professional wrestler? Do you have a job on the side, or is this full-time? Did you dive right in?
I unfortunately am not full-time. I wish I could be, but my area is kind of Memphis area isn't like it used to be, obviously. Mm-hmm. But I do have a day job. I actually sell floor cover.
Do people at work know? Do you talk about professional wrestling at work and everything?
Yeah, they all know, and they support me very well. I mean, you have to have a support system of some kind.
Yeah.
To do that, and they've been really supportive of what I do. You know, allowing me to go to Vegas for a week and things like that.
During your training and even today, are there aspects of professional wrestling, especially the technical side, that you found difficult to learn? I mean, was it harder than you thought it would be?
The biggest surprise was how much it hurt,
mm-hmm.
to be honest. Because when I was growing up, my family were huge wrestling fans. At the same time, they kind of gave me that storytelling that, you know, it's okay, they're just playing. You know what I mean? It doesn't really hurt, that
mm-hmm.
kind of thing. And that was the biggest shocker. When that first day that I ever took a bump in the ring, I was like, this hurts.
Mm-hmm.
This is all going to hurt. And but it didn't make me want to do it any less. You know, I was like, okay, here we go. You know, I'm ready for this now. Give me more. So, I mean, as far as technical aspects and things like that, I picked up on things very quickly. You know, I was always able to watch something and then be able to do it.
Okay.
So I've just been lucky like that, I guess.
What about the entertainment side of it, the promos, you know, building a character? Where do you even practice that kind of stuff before you have to get in front of a crowd and really live that character?
A lot of guys spend years trying to figure out who they are and what works for them. I was very fortunate to kind of understand myself early on. You know, I wanted to be braggadocious. I wanted to be the guy that came out there and could talk with no indication of ever stopping, you know. And for me, it was from the moment I always cut promos to myself in the car and in the mirror and the shower. It didn't matter what I was doing. I was always talking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, understand? I had a very, very good grasp on the English language, and I was always talking. And I didn't realize it really then, but that's been the biggest thing in my career, is the fact that I could do that, that I could talk, that I could take a microphone and tell a story just as well. I'd rather have a 2-minute promo than a 20-minute match. And people don't understand me a lot of times when I say that, but that is power. That is the true power in this business, is having that microphone.
Now, today you are billed as the Golden Boy. Have you had other ring personas before that?
No. I was the Golden Boy from day one.
I find that really, really interesting, and you hear a lot that people, like you said, even in this interview, it takes a while to figure your character out. That's very rare that you knew going in that's what you were going to be.
Yeah, it started out as a, you know, I'm a huge Ric Flair fan. You know, I idolized the guy. I mean, he was one of my heroes growing up, and I wanted to be something similar to that. Nature Boy, Golden Boy. It was a good fit for me.
Mm-hmm.
But then the Golden Boy. You know, when I started out, I didn't have blonde hair. Eventually, partially through my career, I had long blonde hair. but it didn't start out like that. The gold in my name refers to the fact that I'm always a champion. Everywhere I go, I've ended up with a championship around my waist. And that's kind of the story I always tell. That is what I'm always striving to be, is better than everyone else. Be the best of the best.
I wonder sometimes if the fans care more about championship titles than the actual wrestlers, because the wrestlers, I've heard oftentimes, are more concerned with putting on a great show. They really want to first and foremost tell a great story. But in your case, the championship is important. It's really a prop that kind of builds up your character, right?
Well, in my estimation is everything should have a championship. I mean, NBA obviously has, you know, the NBA, the Lombardi Trophy for the NFL, things like that. Everyone has to be fighting for something. If we're not fighting to be the best, then what are we fighting for?
Mm-hmm.
Now, so for me, being a champion is the pinnacle. You know, it was, you know, you ask guys from Harley Race's era, everyone wanted to be the NWA World Heavyweight Champion because that was the man. That's when everyone knew who you were, what you did, and you were the best in this business. And I think there needs to be brass rings like that in this business. So, yes, I think the championship should be, in my opinion, it should be the focal point of any company,
mm-hmm.
the heavyweight title.
How long have you been wrestling now?
12 years.
12 years. Is there a point in time where you say to yourself that you would enjoy a new persona just to kind of freshen up the business for yourself? Not saying that the fans have gotten tired of it, but just something that would kind of, you know, refresh the business for you a little bit, kind of be some new energy.
Well, the thing about it is that I always change something.
Okay.
I always developed a different layer, if you will, to who I was. There was a point in time in my career where I was a pyromaniac. You know, I threw the fire bottle like Jerry Lawler, and I burned somebody. And then I burned somebody else, and I burned someone else, and I was just on this rampage where I was a pyromaniac. And the people, that became part of who I was in that area. And then there was another time where I, you know, we're fighting, we ended up fighting into a concession stand, and we're fighting, I took a bag out, and I put it over the guy's head, and I tried to suffocate him. And all of a sudden, that was another layer of who I was.
Mm-hmm.
There was times when I was on a losing streak. I wasn't the best of the best. You know, I was constantly losing, and I had to find some way to get myself back in. So it's not necessarily that I feel like I need to change a character, but I do need to create different layers, to show different emotions in different ways. And I think over the last 12 years, because I wasn't always the best of the best. You know, I was in Tennessee, and I was working with a company that had guys like Flash Lanigan, who is in OVW in Puerto Rico, and he was heavyweight champion. And we had a lot of great guys on that crew, and it was the best crew in the area. So, and I ended up being heavyweight champion. So to me, I was on the best crew, the best company, and I was the champion. I was the best of the best. And that was the story I told of that.
Mm-hmm.
Just another layer.
Oh, I like that. What other promotions have you worked for?
A lot of stuff in the, obviously, West Tennessee, Arkansas, Mississippi. I've worked for Memphis Wrestling some. I've worked for Power Pro Wrestling. There was Elite Wrestling Entertainment that was near me. And just different federations around here that all had great talent, you know, trying to give something positive back to the business.
Well, now you are a star in traditional championship wrestling. Tell me a little bit more about the TCW product.
TCW, we're bringing wrestling back. I mean, that's really what we believe. That's what we feel. You know, we all grew up on professional wrestling, and that's what we want to give the people. We want to give people professional wrestling the way they remember it, with a new twist, obviously. Everyone has to modernize, but, you know, we have characters, we have people that try to evoke emotion from you and not just try to make you go ooh and ah and then give you a golf clap at the end. We want people to be angry. We want people to be sad. We want people to be happy. We want people to have real, genuine emotion for what we do.
Where do you run your shows?
We are throughout Arkansas, Missouri, Mississippi. We're going to be debuting in Nashville in September. We're going to be in Meridian, Mississippi, June 1st. We started out in Fort Smith, Arkansas, which is always a nice little hotbed for wrestling. And we just kind of expanded there. Our television reaches border to border, coast to coast. So,
yeah, we had a nice opportunity to have Tom Simon on OWW Radio a few weeks ago, and it was interesting to talk to him about your regular television show. And of course, he does the radio. You guys do a really nice job on the internet. You have a nice internet presence. The website is really, really good. I of course know who Matt Riviera is. He was honored by the Cauliflower Alley Club this past year. Lance Hoyt, yourself. So I'm familiar with some of the folks in TCW, but who are some of your other stars?
Well, a guy that I really hope that you got to see when in Vegas was a guy named Kincaid. He wrestled Brian Kendrick.
Oh, right.
It was phenomenal. He is the wizard of technical. I mean, I've watched wrestling my whole life, and I'm one of these guys that I've watched stuff from Japan, Mexico. I'm constantly watching wrestling to learn, to absorb, to have more knowledge than everyone else is, and he does stuff I've never seen. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's amazing to see some of the stuff that he comes up with. Another guy is, you know, I got to give him credit, is the guy that I defeated for the international title, and that's Mr. Saturday Night, Michael Berry.
Mm-hmm.
Very charismatic individual, very talented man. I mean, he has so many facets in this business that he can do. He's one of those guys that's going to be around for a long, long time. And then we have a guy that's 7'2", you know, 300 pounds, in Titan, who, if you walk into a Hooters restaurant with him, you're definitely going to get noticed. So, other than that, we have guys like, you know, Steve Anthony. Steve Anthony was the head trailer for Harley Race for many years. John Saxton is a guy that's been a journeyman in this business, been all around the world for the last 23 years. So, I mean, I think we have a really good mix of guys that want something, want an alternative to what's out there. Mm-hmm. They want to create their own niche in this business. Another guy is, you know, a guy like Sigmund, who is, he's a machine. You know, he's one of those guys that, you know, if you get in the ring with him, he takes this business very seriously, and I'm right with him. So
the website TCWWrestling.com, as I mentioned, it's a really, really good site. You guys do a very, very nice job presenting your products in a very professional manner. And I like that you say how you're continuously learning, studying other wrestlers, past and present. Who are some of the wrestlers from the past? I know you're a big Ric Flair fan, but some other wrestlers from the past that you've tried to really watch their matches and see what you can learn from them?
Ric Flair, obviously, like we said, Arn Anderson, Tully Blanchard, the Horseman, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Ted DiBiase. Ted DiBiase is one of those guys that I really feel is an unsung hero of professional wrestling. I don't think there are enough. I mean, a lot of us sing his praises, but I still think that there's more people that really need to go back and watch that man's work because it was phenomenal. Another one is Nick Bockwinkel, which I had the honor to tell Nick this year how much his career meant to me personally. You know, the way that he carried himself as a champion, the way he carried himself as a professional wrestler, is something that I think everybody needs to take heed from. The way that he held the championship like he was a baby, you know, that it was his baby, that this was the most important thing to him in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that he found ways in his promos to belittle people without them knowing firsthand that they were being belittled. Because he was so smart, he was so intelligent, and I have no qualms about saying how much I've actually borrowed from that man in that terms.
Well, what do you think you can still improve on as a worker?
I've really made an effort to be very well-rounded. I mean, I'm not the biggest, I'm not the strongest, but I'm believable in what I do. I'm not going to be... I'm not going to be a Bruiser Brody, known as the best brawler, but I've had some great matches in that realm. You know, in the same time, I've had ladder matches. I've had matches, I quit matches. I've had submission matches. I've had just about every match that you can have. So I feel that if I'm ever put in a situation, no matter what it is, I can deliver. And that also goes back to, you know, being the best of the best, because I really believe that no matter what I'm in, that I can deliver every night of my life.
Do you get nervous anymore, you know, in front of the camera, in front of a crowd? I've heard from wrestlers that you should always be just a little bit nervous. It keeps you sharp.
Absolutely. And if you don't get nervous, it's not the 2 hours before the show you're nervous. It's not, you know, it's that 30 seconds. I tell people it's that 30 seconds before you walk out that curtain. That's when I get nervous.
Mm-hmm.
And then once I'm out the curtain, it's over. I'm on. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I feel that if you don't have that, because you should always, you know, I can't imagine Michael Jordan not getting a little nervous before a game.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because he's Michael Jordan. And that's why I feel, I think you always have to have that pride in yourself that you want to be the best you can be and do the best you can and deliver when you're asked to deliver. So I always feel like you should have that nervous stomach about you.
TCW is doing very well right now, but what do you think are some of the challenges your promotion faces, you know, to stay successful, to stay going in the right direction?
Well, it's just, you know, WWE is such a huge part of professional wrestling. People say wrestling, they automatically think WWE. The challenge is creating that niche I was talking about, creating that niche to where people know that you're that too, that you're on your own product, and they're not constantly comparing you to them. Obviously, they're the largest wrestling company in the world, the largest wrestling company that's ever existed, you know, on a global scale like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tough mountain to climb, but that's the mountain we have to climb. That's our Everest. We have to let people know that, yes, we're professional wrestling, but we're our own entity. We're not trying to compete with them. We're not trying to do anything with them. We're just trying to be what we believe is best for professional wrestling.
I think it's fascinating, this business, because you look at professional football or the NBA, there's a certain amount of control you have over your career. You know, that if you really are the best of the best, you will get to the National Football League. They'll find you, and you can have a career at the top level. That's not the case always in professional wrestling. Is it fair to say, Greg, that you have to be at least realistic in this business and understand, you know, what you can achieve in this business and be happy with it, because it's not always about, you know, did I hit the most home runs or can I run the fastest? Is that fair to say?
Yeah, to a certain extent. I mean, obviously we all want to be on top in the largest company in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that the recruiting process is not the way it should be. To me, the recruiting process is more of that of Hollywood than it is sports.
Yeah.
You know, in Hollywood, you go to casting calls and you read and you do all this kind of stuff. And sports, if you can throw 100 miles an hour, they're going to find you.
Right. Good point. Yeah.
And I really believe that that's what professional wrestling should be. It should be talent is the bottom line. You know, it's much easier to take someone who has talent and can do all the things we ask them to do and then give them whatever look that you feel like they should have than it is to take someone with a look and give them passion for this business. So to answer your question, I mean, yeah, you have to have some realistic thoughts in your head, like maybe I'm only going to get here, maybe I'm only going to get there. But then again, there's lots of guys that have broke that mold. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, Mick Foley, for instance. You know, CM Punk, obviously, lately. You know, there's been guys that have broken that glass ceiling. So, to me, it's just, like I said, being prepared for everything. You know, I think I've been in several situations that have called upon. That's what I try to tell people. Try to get as much experience as you can. Do anything you can. Because one day, someone that can make you money might ask you to do it, and you've never done it before, and you fall on your face.
Right.
So, for me, I've always put myself in situations where I can learn and be able to be ready for just about anything. I don't think there's too many things that WWE could ask me to do that at some point or another I haven't done or haven't been around so I can see the way to succeed at it.
When we were preparing for this interview, you told me that you tagged with beautiful Bobby Eaton as the team Midnight Gold for 2 years. That must have been a lot of fun and a great learning opportunity itself, huh?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, beautiful Bobby Eaton is, you could go to Cauliflower Alley and go to every person in the room and ask them who the nicest guy in the business was, And I would say probably 99% of them would say Beautiful Bobby Eaton. And he truly is. He is the nicest guy that I've ever met, not just in wrestling, just period. I mean, he'll give you the shirt off his back. And being able to tag with him, you know, I was handpicked to be his tag team partner. He was moving to the Arkansas area. I lived in West Tennessee. And they wanted to do, he wanted to help someone. He wanted to give someone a rub, you know, as far as being tag partners with Bobby Eaton.
Yep.
And they handpicked me to do that because I'd worked with Bobby before. And they handpicked me to do that. And that was an honor in itself. And then you spend 2 years with a guy, traveling the roads, doing the things we do. And, you know, he tells me, he's like, he called me one day and he's, you know, he's like, Greg, I don't, you know, we were just talking randomly, and then all of a sudden, kind of, we had like a 3 or 4 second silence. He goes, Greg, I just want to tell you something. I said, you know, just because, you know, you haven't made it, don't get discouraged. Because, you know, if this was 1985, you'd be on top, working with us, and stuff like that. And, you know, here's one of my idols, you know, giving me that kind of confidence, you know, was, one of the most important times in my life, you know.
Do you prefer tag team wrestling, or are you more comfortable, you know, being a single star?
I'm more comfortable as a single star just because I've done so much of it. And that was part of the reason that I did the thing with Bobby, too, was because, like I said, I wanted to be well-rounded. I wanted to be the best of the best. So I wanted that knowledge. I wanted to say I was part of a great tag team, and I wanted to know what Bobby did. And, you know, Bobby Eaton, we spent 2 years as Midnight Gold with Brian Thompson as our manager, and I never took a pin in 2 years. He took every pin that Midnight Gold ever took. He refused to let people beat me. You know, and that's...
Wow.
That's huge. I mean, you people talk about legends in this business, and I've heard people outright refuse to lose, and here you have a guy like Bobby Eaton. That's giving back to the business like you should.
Mm-hmm. That's something, it's a good lesson learned for you then to pass along, too.
Absolutely, and that's why I've always considered myself a leader. And then eventually, as I got older and got more experience, I was always trying to work with the kid that had only been in a year. You know, let me work with him. You know, let me do something special with him.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that I try to pass along to everybody. It's like, listen, you know, someone taught me.
Yeah.
Someone taught Bobby. Someone's going to have to teach this kid. And then he turns around and he teaches the next one. The fact of the matter is, you know, I've seen so many guys that have been in business 30 years and they're bitter about different things and whatnot, and they don't want to help. They're only out for themselves. And when you're only out for yourself, then everything suffers. The whole card suffers. The whole locker room suffers. You know, but if you go in there with an attitude of, you know, our weakest link is, you know, we need to make that the strongest part. You know, we need to make that weakest link the strongest part, really. And they've all, and everyone pulls together. I've been in several situations where a whole locker room works together to do that kind of thing, TCW being one of those.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes the best product. I've seen it happen too many times.
We spent some time talking about the Cauliflower Alley Club, and, of course, you know, it's where you and I got a chance to meet each other. And by the way, Greg, for someone who doesn't know about the CAC, can you explain the importance of the club?
You know, we talk about giving back to the business. You know, that's kind of what this is. It's everybody kind of joined together. You know, when you're in high school and you like wrestling, you know, it's not the cool thing. You find guys that are kind of like you and, you know, you kind of like wrestling together, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, then when I got into wrestling, I saw that there was, you know, a whole business of people that were just like me. They were crazy about this business like I was. Then even past that, you go to somewhere like CAC, and you see all these guys that care and love and respect the business as much as you do. You know, and that's, you know, there's so much out there that, like I said, is, you know, people that don't know or don't know really what professional wrestling is, or maybe they, you know, bought their ring off the internet or bought their belt off the internet or whatever it is, you know. And you go to a place like CAC, and you see a guy like Nick Bockwinkel, you know, taking the time to listen to me.
Yeah.
Or you see a guy like, I've done several shows with Diamond Dallas Page recently, you know, a guy like that really loves the business and wants to help people. You know, I mean, he'll take the time to critique or, you know, help you out in any way. And, Les Thatcher, I guess I got to talk to Les a little bit this year, which I didn't get to much last year, and just one of those guys that loves the business, wants it to succeed in every form and fashion, whether he's a part of it or not. Ron Hutchison, who of course I knew, I knew about his training experience, but just to be able to sit down and talk to him, and hear some of his thought process is invaluable. And that's what wrestling really is, it's knowledge. So I mean, coming to Colorado Alley is the best thing you can do for yourself, and at the same time, it's selfless because you're giving back to the business.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. And the CAC seminars are also great learning experiences as well. Of course, 2 years ago, one was presented by the WWE's Jim Ross. And were you there for that one?
Absolutely, I've been there for the last 2 years. I would not miss a seminar for anything.
Yeah, and I mean, that was standing room only. Pretty, just an inspirational couple hours with Jim Ross, wasn't it?
Absolutely. And one thing that really hit home with what Jim Ross was talking about was, and this is something I really want, if there's young wrestlers out there listening, is don't worry about the monetary value right now. Don't not work a show because you don't think you're getting paid enough, because you need all the experience you can get. The reason that I got a position in traditional championship wrestling was because I worked a BS show in Nowhere, Arkansas, that had 20 people at it. But that was the show that Matt Riviere saw me.
Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
True. That was the show that Matt Riviere saw me and said, I got to have you. You never know where that opportunity is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact is, it's either a night, if you look at it from money-wise, and you say, well, it's not worth my time, I'll just stay home. That's a night you're not wrestling. That's
mm-hmm.
a night you're not learning, and that's a night that you cannot perfect your craft. I don't, like, we talked about being, whether I was a full-time wrestler, if I was or I wasn't, there was a 5-6 year span there where I was working anywhere from 125 to 150 shows a year.
Wow.
While having a full-time job. So, I made the effort every time I could to learn and to work and to apply all these things. And it's just more things that are in my quiver that I can do.
Sure. No, it's absolutely true. I remember when I started getting into radio, I got some pretty negative feedback from some people. And instead of getting irritated about it, instead of taking it so personally, I really tried to read what they wrote and learn from it. And I realized, they had some good points. It's very, whatever you do for fun or for a living or forever, it's very important to also be listening and trying to learn, because sometimes other people know more than you. And so, I can always get better too. Every show I do, every time I go to work, I try to get better.
Absolutely. I mean, when I was, even now, if I'm on a show with somebody, I will sit down
mm-hmm.
by them and listen to their thought process. Listen to what they're talking about. Listen to what they're trying to go through in their match, and if it makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I learned to do from day one, too. I wanted to learn, so I sat down and I would listen to these people talk about the business. And, the more I hear people talk, the more I start understanding. And I think that's what young people need to do. You need to watch wrestling as much as you can, and you need to sit down when you have opportunities to learn from people, and you need to sit down and you need to – that's free knowledge.
Yeah,
you're not having to pay – you're not having to pay someone $3,000 to take you in a gym and show you stuff. But the psychology part is always going to be the hardest part in this business to get. So if you can sit down and listen to them and get that knowledge, that is the best thing for anybody.
Of the folks wrestling today, who would you love to lock up with in the ring?
Chris Jericho always finds a way to surprise me.
Mm-hmm.
Chris Jericho's matches are, if you see CM Punk versus John Cena, that's a great match.
Mm-hmm.
If you see Jericho versus John Cena, it's a completely different match, still just as much great. Same thing with him and Punk. I mean, they're always going to be different. And that's what, like I said at the top of the show, I look for things that are different. I look for things that are out of the ordinary.
Mm-hmm.
So, instead of being cookie cutter and doing everything a certain way, I love to see Jericho do that. And John Cena is another guy that I would love to work with, just because he is who he is. He's been on top for 10, 12 years now.
Yeah, long time.
Why wouldn't you want to work with a guy like that? Obviously, guys like Taker and Slayer and, you know, are nearing the end, you know, as far as what the possibilities of getting to work with them are, but those are still two of the top guys I'd ever want to work with.
Mm-hmm.
Ricky Steamboat, he's one of my inspirations as well. The two matches that you can either credit or blame for me being in professional wrestling are, number one was Flair Steamboat 2 out of 3 falls from New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
Because like I said, when I was a kid, it was my first memory, and I always told people I want to be a professional wrestler. Well, after that match, I didn't say it to anyone else, but I remember it clear as day. I said it to myself, I have to be a professional wrestler. I have to do what they just did.
Wow.
You know, so that was a turning point. The next turning point didn't come until I was 17 years old. I was 17 years old, and I was on that cusp of, you know, I could do this, maybe I can. How do I get a break? How do I do this?
Yeah.
And I saw Undertaker versus Mankind, Hell in a Cell. And I want to clarify this. It's not that I want to be thrown 20 feet off a cage or 20 feet through a cage or anything like that. But for me, after watching that match and after watching what Mick Foley went through, I said to myself, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to love the business as much as Mick Foley does.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, you can't tell me that he doesn't love the business after putting himself through that.
No kidding.
I mean, and like I said, it's not because, you know, I want to get thrown 20 feet off anything. You know, it's just it went off in my head. You know, I have to love the business as much as he does, or it's going to be all for naught. It doesn't deserve anything less than that.
Well, you have an obvious love for pro wrestling. What about working in the office? You know, maybe booking shows. Would that be something you'd enjoy?
Yeah, absolutely. I've always been a part of the creative process in this business.
Mm-hmm.
It started out, you know, when I was young as, you know, what would you like to do? I'd come up with an idea, I'd take it to the promoter or the booker or whatever, and they go, that's good, we'll do that. Maybe we'll do this, this, and this instead. You know, change a little bit, kind of help me learn. And then eventually it evolved into, well, what would you do with these two guys? And then I'd say, well, I kind of see them like this. And I would do this, this, and this. And it kind of just evolved from there.
Mm-hmm.
Probably about, I've been in the business about 2.5 years, 3 years, and they actually gave me the book. They actually let me start booking.
Okay, cool.
The entire show. So, and ever since that point, I've always either been part of either a committee or I've had the book on my own in some way, shape, or form. So booking to me is another one of those things that's, it's a lost art. You know what I mean? Everything has to have a reason, and everything needs to go accordingly. You know, mm-hmm. if I'm the guys that have worked with me, they can tell you that, you know, if I tell you to throw a clothesline in the finish, there's a reason I told you to throw a clothesline. You know, I have a reason for just about everything I do.
Mm-hmm.
And booking is, you know, I go back and I read, you know, Terry Jarrett's book, and I read Gary Hart's book, and I listen to Jim Cornette and Bill Dundee and Bill Watts and guys like that, and I really want to get in their head and find out, you know, why they make the decisions they make. And here's the thing, bookers, a good booker has a reason for everything they do, like I said, and, you know, they're not going to tell you what that reasoning is because that's not their job. You know, someone may not be able, they know people's limitations. They know if someone can perform to this level or above.
Right.
You know? So if you give them an idea and they say no, it doesn't mean it's not a good idea. It doesn't mean anything. It just means it's not right for what they're doing right now. Everyone should have a vision of what's going on in the future. And if they're booking a show, they have to have some place they're going so they know how to get there. So for me, booking is, that's why I've always said, you know, I could blow out my knee tomorrow and be able to wrestle again, but I can still book a show, and I can still help, and that's why I'll always be a part of this business.
Do you like the fact that the business has been exposed?
No, I don't. And the reason I don't, because even today, I try not to. Like, even though we're sitting here talking about this on a radio show, like, you know, like it's open business, I understand that. But even I don't get on Facebook and the guy I'm feuding with, yeah. I don't get on Facebook and say, hey man, you know, great match, thank you, see you later. You know, stuff like that. Because it kills the suspension of disbelief. You know, I want everybody in every arena to hate me. You know, that's why I don't sell gimmicks. You know, I don't go out during intermissions and sign autographs or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think locker rooms. You know, I may have T-shirts and pictures out there. They can buy them if they want them, but I'm not going to go out there and, you know, pitch it to them. You know
right.
What I mean? Because the fact of the matter is, this business only works if there's good guys and there's bad guys, if there's good versus evil. And I think that's what's lost nowadays, too. You have too many guys that are call themselves bad guys or heels or whatever you want to call it, but the fact of the matter is, they're not wrestling like heels. They're not wrestling like bad guys. They're constantly outshining their baby faces. Mm-hmm. They're doing stuff better than they can do. So if you're a bad guy and you can talk trash and you can also wrestle better than the baby face, then why should they love the baby face and hate you? Yeah, that's always been my, it took me, I didn't always have that. You know, it took someone to beat that in my head too.
Mm-hmm.
Because I did the same thing. I would go out there and I wrestled Flash Flanagan. I talked about Flash Flanagan earlier. I wrestled Flash Flanagan in Arkansas, and we got to the back, and he said, thank you, that was awesome. And he just kept going on about it. He's like, that could have been one of the best matches I've ever had. Thank you very much. And he just kept going on about it. I was so prideful, you know, about that match because of the things that he's done and the people he's worked with.
Sure.
And we come back the next week, and he says, hey, I watched that tape back of our match. I said, hey, how was it? And he goes, it wasn't as good as I thought it was. And my heart sank.
Oh.
And I didn't know what was wrong. And he said, you're too good. You know, you did things better than I could do. You know, you did a belly-to-belly to me, and there was nothing in that match that I could do as good as what that belly-to-belly was. You know, so you have to go out there, and you have to mess with the people. You have to engage them, you know, and you have to, if you're wrestling the baby face that only has, the best they can do is a 7, you know, then you do nothing more than a 4 or 5.
Interesting.
So, and that became my mentality. And you know what? I say that, but the truth is I fought with him for a couple weeks about that. I was mad because I was upset. And I was like, you know, finally I just said, screw it. You know, I'll do it your way. And the first night I went out there and I started engaging the people, I started messing with them, all of a sudden I had to work half as hard to get twice the reaction. And it was like the biggest light, it was like in the cartoons, the light bulb goes off.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was exactly like that. And I could not believe that I had spent, this was probably 5 years at the time, you know, 5, 6 years, doing it the other way. Because I always wanted to be, I always kind of wanted the people to like me as a good wrestler.
Sure. So even if they don't like your character, they still have a lot of respect for you.
Right. And then I kind of realized that I wasn't getting actual heat. You know, it's like, okay, they're out here, this guy's supposed to be the bad guy, this guy's supposed to be the good guy.
Yep.
You know, and they treated it like it was a play. You know, and I was, I don't know, was Willie Loman the bad guy in the play? I can't remember.
Death for Salesman.
Yeah, they were just treating me like I was an actor in the play,
mm-hmm.
and I wasn't getting the reaction that I wanted to get. And when I realized that and I started doing it the other way, that's when everything started to pick up. That's when things really started to click. And then all of a sudden, I was getting the reaction that I was supposed to be getting. I was getting the reaction that I was meant to get. I was getting the reaction that professional wrestling is meant to get. And everything just became so much easier.
That's a pretty interesting story. I also really love your point about booking a card. It's a complete storytelling from the very beginning to the very end. Everyone's got to work together. And obviously, Greg, everything with TCW is going really, really well. I want to thank you so much for joining me today, but before we let you go, where can people find you on social media? I know that you said you don't use Facebook a lot, or, you know, do you have a Twitter account? Where can we get a hold of you?
Well, I do have Facebook. I just don't, I'm not open to everybody on Facebook. Yeah, you can follow me on Facebook and stuff like that. It's the Golden Boy Greg Anthony. So you can follow me there. On Twitter, it's at TCW Golden Boy.
DCW Golden Boy.
Other than that, you know, those two places, best places to find me.
Very good. Well, congratulations again. You are the TCW reigning international champion, and really enjoyed again seeing you in Las Vegas. Thank you for joining me on the show today.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. Best wishes to you.
Absolutely. Thanks, man.
And don't forget to check out the OWW website at onlineworldofwrestling.com for latest news, analysis, and updates from the world of professional wrestling. While you're there, you can also catch up on past episodes of OWW Radio. Email us at radio@onlineworldofwrestling.com to submit topics or questions you would like us to discuss on an upcoming broadcast. Also, make sure to follow us on Twitter at OWWCOM to get all program updates and announcements. We'll also be posting directly to the official OWW Facebook homepage. Till next time, I am David. Thank you again to TCW star, the Golden Boy, Greg Anthony, for joining me today. Catch him on Twitter at TCW Golden Boy. We hope you've enjoyed the program, and we'll be back soon with another edition of OWW Radio.